What's up, sports fans? Welcome to Sports Odds and Ends, your show for the fly-by-night sports fan. I'm one of your hosts, King Cash, joined as always by my good friend and coach, the one, the great JVZ.
It's good to be back, Kaz.
Yeah.
I took a week off there, and it's kind of we're in the spring transition period. I would say baseball is just starting to kick off, and no football. Basketball and hockey are winding the end of the NBA season and NHL seasons down. So, don't want to talk basketball because a lot of bad things are happening there. So, team wise, I should say, Kings are very frustrating. So let's talk baseball instead. A couple weeks ago, we talked about the All-Star game potentially moving, and we presented it as the Players Association is kind of thinking about talking to the league about this. And I'm surprised at how quickly they moved on this, because the league has officially announced that they are moving the All-Star game away from the city of Atlanta and moving it to the city of Denver, to Coors Field, which is known for being very home run happy. So we'll get a pretty interesting home run derby this year, and probably a pretty interesting All-Star game. And from a political perspective, this is another flashpoint around a league choosing to move an All-Star game because at least officially the league and then mostly the players are very unhappy about a particular political situation that's happening, this being the new voting laws in the state of Georgia. So yeah, we'll see whether... Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's one of those things where, like, generally you don't give a lot of credence necessarily to the MLB. It's usually the players pushing on the MLB or the players in the NBA pushing on the NBA to kind of have these fuller statements, because in general, any organization, you know, the MLB or Coca-Cola or any of these other organizations that kind of align themselves with them can play both sides of the field as long as it appeals to them, right? And I think that's kind of what's happening. You're seeing a lot of these corporations playing both sides of the field, because this thing doesn't necessarily appeal to people in general, but definitely not to a lot of these corporations who you know, have that power to be like, we then choose not to do business in these places. And it makes the lawmakers think a little bit.
Yeah,
more than people telling them that they don't like these ideas sometimes, which is an unfortunate, you know, thing, but it happens.
Yeah. And DJM points out in our chat that it's kind of this is a free market thing. Like, this is something that they are doing to appeal to, I mean, not only their employees, but their customers as well.
Yeah,
I think there's a lot of fan support for this. Even some from unhappy people in Georgia that were, that they understand that it kind of sucks that they are going to lose this All-Star game, but maybe this can get their politicians to wake up a little bit and hopefully change things,
hopefully
for the better. But the Atlanta Braves themselves issued a statement saying that they were disappointed that this was happening, and a lot of the people that are going to be hurt by the laws are the people in Atlanta, so this kind of just punishes them further. They were hoping to use the game as a platform to shine a light on the issue. Now, at least the team can't do that because now the game's going to be in Denver. But I don't see why the team can't continue to do that anyways. So There's another side to this, but I think that side is mostly motivated by, hey, we had the game in our town and now we miss out on a bunch of money.
Dang, we can't be politically correct now.
It's weird, but I'm pretty sure I phrased that a lot more sarcastically than.
I think you did it justice.
Than it needed to be, but it's kind of because we're a little cynical about how Major League Baseball has acted in the past. I think this is a pretty positive gesture, even though it's a punitive one towards the city of Atlanta.
It's in a very I don't know, this is going to sound dumb, I think, but like in a very weird way, right? It's rich people complaining about the people they pay to keep them rich, doing things to stay in power to keep those people rich.
Yeah, it's either way, can't really stick to sports. this is something that's gotten a lot of politicians pissed off. I think the governor of Texas has refused to throw out a first pitch in a Texas Rangers game because he's all protesting baseball's cancel culture and all this bullshit. So
yeah, I love the babyfication of it that's happening too. It's like these people are adults, but they're children. They're children at the heart of it, and I love it. I love it. It's silly. It's dumb, and nothing's really going to come from it. You know, Georgia's not going to go back on this. They've worked really hard to do this so that they can hold on to this pseudo amount of power that they do have, or the people who are in power now, right? Because it's a play by the people who are in power now to hold on to the little bit of power that they have. And I mean, that just is what it is, right? There's no way around that. There's no beating the bush. There's no gray area. They're trying to do things to make it easier and harder for people to vote, right? They want to make it easier for the people who will vote for them to vote for them, and they want to make it harder for the people who won't to not, right? Amongst the myriad of other issues that this presents. So it's one of those things. It's, you know, like you said, it's hard to stick to sports when these kind of things are going on, but it's better to have allies, even if they aren't your allies at the end of the day, right? The powers that be in the MLB are not necessarily our allies, but it's good to have them on our side when we can. So I don't want to full 100% poo-poo them. I mean, I always will, but it's good to have people on your side that can actually get these people to be held accountable for their actions sometimes.
I appreciate that they are listening to a majority of their employees and a majority of their fans.
That's the good way to put it.
And they're not just trying to fight against it, because if they were, then we'd be even more mad.
All right, let's go on to some other baseball news. So as you said, the baseball season has kind of officially been kicking off. The Angels are tearing it up. They are looking really good, which is kind of, I think, was the sentiment coming in, that the Angels would look like a pretty good team. And then they would have some challengers, but they have stepped up to the plate for the most part. And other than that, we're still on the boo train for the Astros, which I am all on. You know, I'm here for it. Keep booing the Astros.
Yeah, we got now that we have fans back in the stands, they get to participate in some of that now. And you got fans throwing inflatable trash cans onto the field in the middle of the game.
Boys.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's up?
Kaz, I'll ask you first. How long is booing the Astros going to be a thing?
How long will people stick with it, or how long do I want it to continue?
How long will people stick with it?
I think with people actually being able to express their anger directly kind of now, right? Like being able to go to games and do things to them. I think we have a good season and a half worth of anger to get out, right? I don't think they readily got that ability to express their angers directly to the Astros and had to do it from afar, but now that they can do it, I think we got about a season and a half.
Easy.
Yeah, I think season ticket holders will get over the course of a single series against the Astros, that's when they'll eventually wear out of booing them. But I think since not everybody gets to go to games all the time, I think it'll be at least a season before we see it start wearing out. I think it will never truly die until the Astros and until more of the players that participated in this cheating scheme get distributed around the league, just through, you know, signing contracts or whatever, or getting traded, until you see, you know, the likes of Jose Altuve, you know, playing for another team, then, you know, for now, like, a lot of the players are still on the Astros, so it still makes sense to just boo the Astros and cheer whenever they get hit by pitches and stuff. And
do you guys hate me and the Tigers for hiring AJ Hinch?
No.
All right, cool.
AJ Hinch got punished for this. The players didn't, and the players were very defiant in press conferences when they acted like they did nothing wrong, and or acted like they did their time when they none of them did any time for this. Only the coaches got punished.
I think it's one of those things. I'm more on blaming the collective than the individual. So the Astros as an organization, hell yeah. No, I'm blaming them every day. Every waking moment of my fibrous beam, I blame the Astros as an organization. I blame, obviously, the people who decided to participate. But I think when you break up those kind of things and you start to filter people out into other places, and you're like, you people can no longer be a collective together, right? Because you did something bad under each other's watch, right? So now we need to separate you. It's like an old school kind of thing, right? When you have that group of kids who when they're together they do bad shit, but if you put them in other groups they kind of fall into place. It's that, right? So people going to other teams, other organizations and things like that, I am not gonna now blame that organization. No, I think that is the best thing to do, is to make these people move away from each other and get them back on track with the rest of the class.
Any player that actually comes out and apologizes, I will forgive. But none of them have really done that. And it's not just that they haven't done that. It's just that they've been just completely defiant about it. They acted last year when they made their little playoff run.
Who did apologize? You know who did?
AJ Hinch.
And someone else that I hold very near and dear to my heart.
Oh, Justin Verlander?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, so... And I mean, he wasn't participating either because he wasn't hitting. Maybe he knew about it and didn't say anything, but...
What is this saying? Fuck, I can't think of what the saying is, but, like, quiet... Like, basically not calling it out is just as bad
as
being a part of
he
it.
He was complicit.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I have less anger about that than I have about to some extent, yeah, sure, like everybody's going to try to cheat a little bit to get an advantage, but once you get caught, then to act like you did nothing wrong, you were entitled to do bad things, and It was a rough attitude by the Astros last year, by the Astros players last year. And so if they think they were able to get away with it, they were able to get away with a season without fans booing them. I think a lot of people have some pent up anger about this that they are now releasing. All right. On to some other baseball news. Tim LoCastro, who, if you don't know who Tim LoCastro is, search YouTube for Tim LoCastro and you will find a foolish baseball video citing how interesting of a player he is. He is one of the fastest players in the league. One of those guys that can hit an infield single and one of those guys that can hit a ball into the infield and still dash to first base and get there safely. Also very good at getting hit by pitches, like absurdly good at getting hit by pitches, maybe the best of all time at that. Also very, very good at stealing bases. He just claimed the perfect stolen base record. He has stolen 28 bases throughout his career without getting caught a single time. So that is a new record. The last record was 27, held by Tim Raines, I believe.
That is hella impressive.
28. It's so impressive that now that he's claimed his 28th base, his cleats have been requested by the Baseball Hall of Fame. And that record still stands until he gets caught.
Yeah.
So stolen bases are kind of something that has gone out of style in baseball, just because they're a lot riskier. Teams are
better at seeing it. Is kind of the big thing. Teams are better at scouting it and knowing it. We went into an era where you didn't have these different types of baseball players, right? We went into an era where everyone was a slugger, right? Everybody was trying to hit for the goddamn fences. These nimble guys stayed in track or football or basketball. They didn't, you know, keep playing baseball. We lost those nimble guys for a while, but they're coming back. They're making a comeback.
Yeah, maybe. And maybe if we'll have to see the stats. They've only been playing for about 2 weeks, but it looks like they managed to accomplish deadening the ball like they wanted. So, we'll get a much larger sample size as the season goes on. But maybe as that starts to happen, maybe players like this will start growing in popularity again or become more useful.
This is my thing, right? Just kind of in general, I think you need this well-roundedness in different kinds of sports to really attract people, right?
Yeah,
slugging as a thing is attractive, right? Home runs are attractive, but I don't think it's enough, right? I don't think it's enough to really get people like into baseball. I think when you have these other aspects of things, like really good pitching, like really, really good, like what the fuck was that ball type pitching, like rather than having people stick to the primary three, a curve, a slider, and a fastball, like, you know, like get some crazy shit out there that just is like makes people like. Like those kind of clips on the internet soak up views and get people to want to watch the game, right? So having a guy steal bases like that, right? Having these guys who can run around the base path and do these things like that, like confuse people and it throws people off and it makes the game different, right? When everybody in the game knows what to expect, everybody watching the game knows what to expect.
Yeah, and so, like, yeah, we do have all these players that are swinging for the fences, and it seems like, okay, that's the optimal strategy, so let's have everybody do that, and that's just resulting in a lot more strikeouts. Pitchers are getting, you know, incredible. And if you want to see clips of that kind of thing, check out the Pitching Ninja account on Twitter. That guy does a lot of videos where he'll show you like two pitches that a particular pitcher throws that they look very, very similar to each other until like halfway to the plate, and then one of the pitches will just curve. So he likes showing videos like that, and he'll show it with like, you know, one pitch, then the other pitch, and then both pitches overlaid against each other just to show like how hard it is to hit one of those. So it's you know, like not only is the pitching getting better, but the batters are just taught to swing at these all the time. And so we're getting a lot more strikeouts, and that's making the game a little bit more boring because you kind of have just kind of three outcomes. You either home run, out, or strikeout, and you don't get a whole lot of base running anymore. So having the Tim LeCastros out there that can get on base by either getting hit by a pitch or hitting hitting short balls and just sprinting to first base just adds a little bit of variety to the game. So Tim LeCastro, if check out the video on him on YouTube from Foolish Baseball. That's a nice fun 12-minute watch. Meanwhile, in San Diego, we talked about the Padres getting off to a pretty good start. Probably the highlight of the season so far for them is Joe Musgrove, one of their recently acquired pitchers, who happens to be a San Diego native, throwing the very first no-hitter in San Diego Padres history. So that's a pretty cool story to see one of your local guys not only make it big with the local team, but also having a historic moment with the local team. Probably something that he dreamed about when he was a kid growing up and learning to play baseball. So, in a 3-0 victory against the Texas Rangers. Yeah, Musgrove has made history. And the Padres are off to a pretty good start this season, even though Fernando Tatis Jr. is injured. But they also acquired Ha-Seong Kim in the offseason. And I think they were struggling to figure out where they were going to play him and when he was going to get opportunities to bat. But I think this injury has given him a chance to step in a little bit early. So, I don't know, probably maybe a small blessing in disguise, even though they've got their franchise talent on the shelf right now. But they and the Dodgers are fighting it out, as we all expected, for the lead for the division in the National League West. And the Dodgers are they've got roughly the same record right now, but the Dodgers are in a little bit of a pickle because their pitcher Trevor Bauer is being investigated for doctoring baseballs, which is something that the league said that they were going to try to pay more attention to this year.
Yeah, guys putting tack on the ball and all that other kind of stuff to make it harder to hit.
Mostly to increase spin rate, because I think at least the analytics has figured out that that's kind of one of the really, really important stats, because you can put more spin on the ball, you can curve the ball a little bit better, you can throw wilder pitches that that are harder for batters to hit. And this is also something that is really, really hard to catch, just because if you kind of pay attention to how a baseball game flows, they go through so many baseballs. It's not like basketball where they use the same ball the entire game.
Basketball does have a couple of balls, but they try to keep it the same one. Yeah. People get weird about ball feel. Which is a whole other discussion that I don't think we're ready for.
Yeah. So for baseball, they just you throw a pitch and it hits the dirt, then that ball gets tossed.
Toss it into the stand, toss it off to the side, stuff like that. But you do have I think they have a percentage of ones they keep just to kind of check throughout the game and stuff like that. And there's supposed to be these checks and balances that happen throughout the game, but it doesn't always happen. I do know that for a fact. It doesn't always happen the way it's supposed to. So you have these situations to deal with as they come and go.
Yeah, and the only person that actually gets to feel every single ball is the pitcher, the pitcher and the catcher, and those two are on the same team. So unless the home plate umpire gets a chance to actually pick up a ball and actually
every so often you will see, because the umpire does have balls that they have that they'll give to the catcher. They do that sometimes, or every so often you'll see the catcher hand it to the ump just to check it real quick. So there, yeah, there are those things. But yeah, it's like you said at the beginning, it's kind of, it's not regulated enough, right? It's not this consistent thing that happens. It's not like you said, the Empire isn't checking every single ball, which maybe they should, but you know, it's,
yeah. But even then, it's like, it's really hard to,
yeah,
to catch somebody in the act. And then after the fact, if they take all these balls that are not hit out of the park and send them to the league office, which I think is something that they're trying to do, then.
But why is this something that has to happen at the league? Why is there not just a league officiated party at the game, right? A ball is out of play, right? Like, since ball field doesn't matter, right? Have someone else collect the balls, get a ball boy out there, collect the ball, hand it to this person. This person checks it. Boom, boom, boom. Cool. We can put this ball back in play. Hey, this person checks it. Something weird about this ball. Okay. We take it to a place in the stadium. Somebody does some checking. What's this, you know, like, is there something sticky on there? Is that just, you know, like, whatever, you know what? It's okay. Okay, cool. You know, like, we don't necessarily stop play right then and there. It just gets checked.
I think that's actually what's being done.
Yeah.
And so, like, these particular balls that are being inspected are because they discovered some visible markings and they discovered that they were sticky. So, so they're sending it to the league office for further inspection and maybe analysis of what substances are on these balls. But even then, it's, you know, they're used in a game pitched by Trevor Bauer, but who knows whether Trevor Bauer was the one who put stuff on the balls or whether this is like, there's like a lot to go through to actually prove that Trevor Bauer did something wrong here. So it's, I don't know, foreign substances on the balls is something that has been accused of. It's one of those things where they say every pitcher does something like this. If they can get away with it, just because it is so hard to catch. So it would be really hard like I said, it's hard to catch somebody in the act. Maybe if they can get somebody to confess, that's one thing. If they can get maybe an assistant to confess to helping them, or if you catch them with something inside their gloves or inside their hat where they store some sticky stuff so that they can rub their hands on it without getting caught, then that would be a little bit more clear cut. But if the only evidence is on the balls itself, it's kind of hard to tie that to the player. So this is I don't know, more cheating in baseball. Everybody cheats, but yeah, this is, yeah, like I said, with all these strikeouts that are happening, I think we're trying to shift the balance back in the favor of batters, but not so much that they just keep hitting home runs all the time. Just more base hits, put more balls in play just so that there's a little bit more variety in the game. And so we're trying to tackle rules, trying to tackle regulations, trying to tackle strategy, all kinds of different ways to try to make the game a little bit more interesting, a little bit more watchable, and less people swinging and missing at strike after strike after strike. So, yeah, that's something overall to look for this baseball season, and we'll keep you guys updated as
always,
the year goes on. We got a full 162 game season this year, and it might be the last season of baseball for a while. So, so maybe we'll pay a little bit more attention to it.
We say that every time.
I don't know. They're mad at each other. Although I feel like this All-Star game thing, it was part of what was so surprising about it was, like, you know, the Players Association and the league hates each other, but they got together and got this thing done quick. So I don't know. Maybe there's hope there. Maybe that's a sign of good cooperation to come.
Yeah, we'll see. Speaking of cooperation, we just wrapped up the men's and women's college NCAA tournament for basketball. Finally wrapped up. We had a bracket for sports odds and ends. Our bracket winner on the men's side was Sunbun. Ended up with the picking the right winners there. And for the women's side was our friends of the show, Chimera.
Yeah. And as far as the men's side goes, where we had the most participants, not a single person picked the national champion, which was Baylor. A bunch of people picked Gonzaga, who lost in the championship game to Baylor. And it just got absolutely thrashed by Baylor. But and I think on the women's side, UConn was the heavy favorite and didn't even make it to the to the championship game. They got upset by Arizona, and then Stanford beat Arizona in the finals. So I feel like it was a very exciting tournament. Even me, somebody like me who is very cynical about college sports and amateur sports, and I am still salty about the fact that we had, you know, such a good tournament, such a fun tournament, and none of the players got paid for any of this. Overall, like, ratings did pretty well. Even though ratings on the men's side dipped a little bit, they dipped a little bit less than a lot of other sports did. So I think that's kind of a sign that that the sport and sports broadcasting is kind of on the uptick. The women's side, there was a massive increase in viewership. That's also a good sign, both from a health of the sport perspective and from a health of women's sports in general perspective, because this is also the first time that ESPN committed to putting all of the tournament games on TV, not just on TV but on national TV. So I think what this kind of proves is that if you put women's sports on television and you treat it with the respect that it deserves, then you do actually get a lot of people watching. Or at the very least, there was a ton of buzz around this on social media, and because of the buzz, then the viewership followed. So the viewership always gets cited as like a chicken and egg situation, where because nobody watches and we don't put it on TV. And I think this proves that if you make the leap to put it on TV, then people will watch.
Yeah.
And so the numbers have reflected that. If you look in the show notes, we'll put some interesting stories in there about how the rights to the women's tournament actually gets sold. It's actually like a part of a package that is completely separate from the men's tournament. So But it's bundled with a bunch of other stuff, so it's actually way undersold for as far as like how much money could come in from this if they actually separated it and gave it the same level of attention that they did this year. So there's a ton of potential there. If you're interested in reading about that, so check out our show notes, sportsoddsandends.com, for that. Moving on to other TV rights news. The NFL has added a 17th regular season game, finally.
It's been a back and forth. It's been discussed ad nauseum by a lot of people, and I think rightfully so, that this thing needed to be talked about a lot. I'm still on the fence about it. I'm not super in on the idea of it, but you know, here we are.
Yeah, this was something that was agreed to by the players last year, I think, as part of some sort of concessions. But they got a lot of other stuff in return for giving the owners the rights to do this within the next couple of years. And so they chose to do that this season. At least the total number of games is going to stay the same at 20. Just one of the preseason games is getting converted to a regular season game. And I think there's going to be some reduced off-season team activities. And now that the pandemic has gotten people more used to conducting meetings online, I think a lot more team activities are going to be online, like meetings to study the playbook, stuff like that can be conducted online, and they don't necessarily need to have players fly in from the off season for these mm-hmm. quote unquote optional, but not really optional team activities. I think as far as the biggest changes go for fans, other than we get another week of football and the fantasy football season is 1 week longer. I think all the records, it kind of creates a statistical shift in the air, as you know, we had a 16 game season since 1978 and outside of a couple shortened seasons due to strikes and lockouts, it's been a 16 game season this entire time. So like all the single season records, there's kind of a common reference point for all those years. And now that there's an extra game to add on top of that, there's kind of a new thing. We'll start hearing people talk about, you know, in the 16 games era, this happened. DJM gave us a stat earlier this week of in the 16 game era, the Lions had the single worst winning percentage out of all the teams in the NFL. And so now that we've moved to the 17 game era, then things are a little bit different. We had several teams go 0-16 during this entire time. I think one team go 16-0. So now these quote unquote perfect records will have to be 17-0 in the new era of NFL football. I think the elephant in the room is this going to have an effect on player injuries and player safety? Because that's the reason why the players were against this for a long time. And there's some research that might indicate that a lot of the injuries happen in preseason as players are kind of ramping up and getting back into the flow of playing games and less towards the end of the season. But I don't know how much I believe that. So yeah. We'll have to see. Like maybe, I mean, either way, no matter what, the league isn't going back on this. There's just too much money at stake, so they're not going to reverse this decision. Even if it turns out that players are getting injured more often, Thursday night football is something that has caused players to get injured more often, and they haven't backed off on that either. So these things are just too lucrative for them to do that. They'll find other ways of trying to work around that problem if it pops up.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. It's always hard to really it's hard to really quantify, like, what is the orbiting factor, right? Is it the injuries? Is it this? Is it, you know, like, I don't know, man. It's always hard to really say. Like, different people always have different perspectives, but I mean, there are stats to show that certain things just do lead to more people getting hurt.
Yeah. And I mean, more game time seems like the obvious thing.
Yeah. For that, but it's also probably there's also a sense of preparedness and readiness that goes into it too, right? Like, you had as I've been watching a lot of these clips, fucking Ocho Cinco, he says people just are not prepared to get hit. People are not in the mindset where they actually understand what's going to happen, right? Or how it is. There's too much reliance on science and not much reliance on knowing how to do the actual thing. So
a lot of other dumb stuff was said during that interview. Yeah. So I don't know how much I trust the likes of Chad Ochocinco and Brandon Marshall to accurately assess the situation.
Yeah. But I mean, that's in the sense that he is a player who has very minimal.
They do have a perspective that should be heard. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think it's 100% correct, right? But I think having the perspective that you know, sometimes there's too much reliance on what other people tell you is going to happen to you than knowing what's going to happen to you.
Yeah. And on the flip side, I think there's something to be said about the fact that I guess old school players used to play a lot more, but I don't know how much of that is down to you know, just they played a lot more because they wanted to be seen as tough and they didn't take care of themselves, and we see that reflected now in just how poor the health is for former NFL players, and and so now that we've learned a lot more about that, we're being a lot more restrictive. And players seem like they're softer, but maybe there's a benefit to that in the fact that players can play longer and have longer careers. And after their careers are over, they're not, you know, crippled for life from playing this game. So,
yeah,
that's
I mean, I definitely think the walk it off mentality needs to go away. But I do think there is a sense of and this is a thing I've said before. Right. I think there is a sense of one, teaching people how to get hit. And two, teaching people how to hit.
Yeah.
Right. Like I rather than this machismo of go knock a guy out. No, go yeah. hit a they guy.
Wrap their legs.
Wrap his legs. Hit center mass. Like, do these things to actually bring a guy down. Stop trying to knock guys out. Stop trying to injure guys. Stop, you know, with the mentality of being tough. Stop going out there with this chip on your shoulder and go out there with just pure facts and skill. Know how to do the thing, right? Like your career means a lot to you. Guess what? That person's career means a lot to them too. And that should weigh on your mind.
Yeah. All right. So we'll see how that plays out during the actual NFL season, which is still months away. We're not even at the NFL draft yet. So this is the one time in the offseason where the NFL gets to be kind of quiet. And then once the draft starts later this month, then we get back into the NFL being a year-long sport. We'll take a little bit of calm where we can get it. Let's move on to some esports for the first time in a while. We got a match fixing scandal in Counter-Strike. A lot of this is centered around an investigation that's happening in Australia right now. But in an interview with Ian Smith, who is the commissioner of the Australia's Esports Integrity Commission, which I think is an official government position over there, in an interview between him and Slash32, the YouTuber. He stated that the FBI is actually getting involved on the American side to investigate a small but significant group of players for organized match fixing in the North American NBL. So as far as like how this match fixing is happening, it's not necessarily players taking it upon themselves to do this, but players being approached by betting groups and being asked to throw games and being paid large amounts of money in order to do so.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something that has, I think it's in other sports, it almost feels like it's a thing that used to happen many, many years ago, centuries ago, even for some of the older sports, but it's something that just doesn't really happen today. Now that esports is kind of new and upcoming, and especially in the United States, where sports betting is a very new thing, it's
But the thing about it is this: none of this conceptually is new to Counter-Strike. It's kind of been persistent from the fact of individual cheating to collective cheating as kind of always tainted Counter-Strike. In a sense, it's been a thing that's been around forever. One of their biggest scandals being the iBuyPower scandal. where a team like was literally like legitimately throwing a tournament for a very large sum of money that was going to be transferred to them through skins, and the like Counter-Strike market like thing is you could sell the in-game items that you could get for actual money, for actual dollar value, which is still a thing, and has also led to other scandals. But what happened was, those players got caught because they were very greedy about it, and very like obvious in how they went about it in cheating. And then we kind of came into a realm of individual cheating, mostly for player perspective, like players trying to just win tournaments. The online aspect that has been happening recently, where we haven't been able to have live events, has also kind of brought this back to the forefront, because there's nobody watching over your shoulder, there's nobody regulating the PC you're using. And like we said with baseball, right? If you give people an opportunity, everybody's going to take the opportunity given to them. If you give them an opportunity. The problem comes in too many people try to make it okay. And that's where these integrity things started, because too many people try to make it okay. And it's not. And that's been the problem with the regulation of it, like, forever. To this point.
Yeah, and that's it's why so many sports and I'm thinking, like, you know, back to basketball and football and traditional physical sports, so many of them are reluctant to embrace betting in the United States, just because there's an integrity factor to the game. And yeah, and any scandal, like, you know, the Tim Donaghy refereeing scandal in basketball, mm-hmm. in the NBA, that it makes it difficult for newer fans to want to watch the sport, because they don't trust that the games that they are watching are clean. And if it seems like it's rigged, then why bother watching? Because the outcome is already predetermined. The outcome is determined by who gets paid more money behind the scenes, not by who actually plays better on the court or on the field, or on the screen in the case of esports. And so I think it's especially important for a growing sport to maintain this type of integrity. It kind of shows that Australia is a little bit ahead of the curve, the fact that they've kind of embraced betting to the point where they understand that, you know, now that betting is in place, that they have to have a legal commission there to investigate these sorts of things, to make sure that the integrity in the game is there. Yeah.
Like one of the other notable problems with it is also, you know, like the money distribution, right? Like there are teams where everybody is kind of paid at value, and then there are teams where people aren't but could be. Sometimes it's hard for people. They see people earning more money than them doing the same things that they're doing, right? And it falls too many times into a money aspect of things that it shouldn't.
If you can get paid more to cheat than you can get paid to play, then it becomes
just cheat.
that's our poll for this week. Assuming you get caught but keep your money, even though you get your reputation destroyed, how much money would it be enough for you to throw a sporting event that you're playing in? So mm-hmm. Check out our at Sports Odds Ends on Twitter and find that poll there. We'll also have a link in the show notes for that as well. But yeah, it's like everybody kind of has a breaking point. Not everybody says that they would be clean. Everybody says that they have integrity, but maybe how much integrity you have is determined by how much money you're mm-hmm. willing to be bought for.
Because there's also, like we said, it comes, it also, there's a factor of it that comes back to what we said before, that that sense of not like necessarily camaraderie, but like cohesion, right? Because there's been these scandals, like the big iBuyPower one, right? Mostly all the players in that, right, of a five-man team got banned for life from major Counter-Strike tournaments, except for one person, because he said he didn't take place in it. But you were still complicit in the fact that it happened. So he got more of a slap on the wrist than everyone else did, but there was a complicity, right? You knew it was happening. But at the same time, it's that feeling, right? What is he going to do to stop it, right? Because the majority of that team is run by the players of that team, which is another thing I've always talked about is a problem in esports. When the players have the majority control of the team, things like this can happen, right? Because there's nobody to tell them that, no, this isn't what we should be doing, right? The organization isn't, because the organization is just a money funnel, right? They're just like, hey, we're paying you. Make sure you get this, you know, get it done. The coaches are in most positions are glorified babysitters. So you just have these kids who are like, yo, I want to make money. Let's all make money. If we do this, we make money. So like, fuck it.
Yeah. In the United States, we essentially have 50 different sets of laws. Actually, DJ, I'm asking me a question that I'm Mr. Pro Player on this podcast, and so how do I feel about that? And I would agree with your stance on that, Kaz, because there has to be like some balance. There has to be pushback everywhere, at least a little bit, to look out for everybody's interests, because you know, the players are going to look out for their own interests, and I'm a very strong proponent of players getting theirs, getting as much money as they can where they can get it, assuming that it's all done kind of above board and legally and in a way that does not destroy the sport that they are trying to play. Because overall, like I want to continue watching the sport. I want to be entertained by it. I want to tune into a match and know that that what I'm watching is actually is not scripted behind the scenes, or that I want to believe that I'm watching an actual competition. If I want to watch something that's scripted, I can go watch wrestling, or I can go watch anime, or something like that's. But I tune into these things because I want to watch something real and watch something that's truly competitive. And so if the players are doing something that that destroys that reputation, then there needs to be somebody else pushing back on that. And in most cases, it's the league with an established set of rules. And then outside of that, it's also nice to have, you know, an independent government investigating that as well. Unfortunately, I mean, so that's what Australia has here. They've got this Esports Integrity Commission, and that's a national thing as well. In the U.S., since we kind of have different gambling laws in every state, that right now we kind of have 50 different sets of rules on that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of makes things a little bit difficult to kind of coordinate all that together. Like the FBI is in the middle of this investigation right now, but yeah, as far as being able to police things on a national level, I think a lot of the stances that you know, like the NBA and the NFL have had, they're shifting to being pro gambling, but they also want to make sure that if this happens, they want to get a cut of this gambling revenue, and they want to use a part of that to set up their own investigative commission so that they can investigate their players and make sure that everything is above board. So these independent integrity commissions are important to maintain that, you know, that integrity of the game. And it doesn't take much. It takes one scandal to just completely destroy the reputation mm-hmm. of a sport and forever make people believe that that this game is rigged.
Because if more stuff comes out of like one of the big problems, right, is the fact that like right now in the landscape of things, especially when it comes to esports, America is the trash can of esports, right? Player careers come here to die. Like we're kind of the laughing stocks of pretty much most esports outside of fighting games. So when it comes to these other esports and these bigger esports, we don't like, especially Counter-Strike, like, no, we don't get any respect from that. It's Europe, and that's pretty much it. Like Europe is kind of the best of the best, and they get all of the credit for it, because America is just looked at like, one, we don't produce good players. Two, we don't have like, we're just bad. That's it. It's just like we're looked at as like the trash can of esports outside of fighting games.
Yeah, so we'll as we monitor the growing landscape of esports, this is something that's going to have to fall in line, and this is something that applies at a wider level to all sports in general as America adjusts to the idea that sports betting is now legal in a lot of different states, but legal in different ways. And so how do we get everybody to investigate this? How do we make sure that everybody who participates in any sport is doing so cleanly, not just from a physical perspective and performance enhancing drug perspective, but also from a financial perspective as well?
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah. All right. This seems to be a recurring story on this show, mm-hmm. but the Formula One season started, and Fernando Alonso is back, former world champion. He's back on the grid racing for Alpine Racing, who is that's the new name for the Renault racing team. The Bahrain Grand Prix happened first race of the season, and Alonso had to retire from that race on lap 32 due to a sandwich wrap piece of paper getting stuck in his rear brake duct. I say this is a recurring thing because I believe this is the third sandwich related racing incident that we talked about on this show. Previously, I think there was a qualifying session in NASCAR that was ended abruptly because somebody dropped a sandwich on the track from up in a lookout area. Last season, I believe the Haas racing team, or it might have been the season before, but the Haas racing team had to pit one of their cars because a sandwich bag got stuck in the front wing, and that was causing a huge decrease in lap time.
And so
this is now the third sandwich related incident, and I don't know why this keeps happening. Keep your sandwiches away from the race area. Maybe have a designated area to eat.
I mean, they obviously probably do, but you know, people don't listen. People don't do what they're supposed to, and that's this thing, right? Like, people are never doing the thing that they're supposed to be doing. Because the whole point is that you don't want any kind of loose debris getting into these cars, because these cars are not your everyday road cars, right? They're designed for as much performance as they can muster. So it's really tough. It's really, really tough, because there's always this people factor that somebody's going to do something dumb.
Yeah, and it could be, I mean, again, it might not be the racer. It could be anybody on any crew who did something and who made a mistake. It could be somebody on the pit crew who puts in a tire wrong or something like that. There's so many details that go into this, and so many hours spent in labs trying to model the aerodynamics of these cars and or model the performance of brake ducts and things like that. And It sucks whenever there's like an outside force like a sandwich bag that that ends up throwing a figurative wrench into the system. Although I'm sure at some point somebody has actually thrown a literal wrench into the system when it comes to errors like these. So racing is definitely, I mean, one of the things I love about racing is that the difference between success and failure is so fine, and it requires such a strong coordinated effort from so many different people. That's kind of why it's so impressive to see a team like Mercedes stay on top for so long, because you know any fuck up can create an opportunity for another team to come in and take the reins. This year, it seems like Red Bull is going to give them a really strong competition for the Constructors' Championship this year. So I think this is definitely going to be a season to watch in Formula One. It'll be the last season before regulations change. So everybody check out the Formula One season if you're interested, or check out Drive to Survive on Netflix if season 3 is out. So they did a somewhat decent job with the last portraying the last season, even though they took a lot of editorial discretion this time. But overall, it's still a very entertaining show that is a very good entry point into the sport if you're looking to get into that. So that's our show for this week. As we mentioned, we got a poll up asking you how much money it would take for you to destroy your reputation and throw a match. So check that out on Twitter at Sports Odds Ends. Don't check us out individually on Twitter, because all I'm doing right now is whining about the Kings. So nobody wants to see that. SportsOddsAndEnds.com if you want to check out show notes and all of our past episodes. We also got links to our Discord, our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/sportsoddsandends, and our Patreon, patreon.com/sportsoddsandends. Thank you to all of our patrons who are financially supporting the show every week. Thank you to all of you who continue to listen to the show every week. We'll see you next time.